This is a meeting of the title setting board pursuant to Article 40 of Title 1, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is August 1st, 2007. The time is 1:31 p.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room at 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The title setting board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is here on behalf of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. And then to my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my far left is Maury Kanizer, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Setting Board. And to my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. I want to provide a little bit of general information. We do have a sign-up sheet for anybody who wishes to testify that's on the table by the back door. For new measures, the procedure that we follow is basically is three steps. We have one rehearing and two new measures today on the agenda. But for new measures, first the board hears from proponents, and we give the board an opportunity to ask questions of the proponents to make sure that the board understands the proposal. The second step is for the board to determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. And that necessarily includes determining whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution, since the Constitution says the board may not set a title if a measure comprises more than one subject. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then it proceeds to work off of staff-prepared drafts that are also on the table by the back door. I should probably explain also that for the titles that the board set and the staff drafts, we say that there's titles. There's really two titles that you'll see. One is the title, the other is the ballot title and submission clause, which is identical to the title except that it's in the form of a question. So we typically discuss the title with the assumption that any changes we make to a draft title will be made in the ballot title and submission clause. And of course, the board is not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but merely with the setting of a proper and fair title. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the board when a proposal first comes before the board may file a motion for rehearing within 7 days after the meeting of the title board. The title board meets by statute on the first and third Wednesdays of the month. So, for example, if someone files a motion for rehearing on one of the two new measures that are on our agenda today, the motion for rehearing would be heard 2 weeks from today. With that, I'd like to turn to the first agenda item. This is 2007-2008 number 36, definition of person. This is before the board on a motion for rehearing. And I'd like to hear from the proponents of the motion for rehearing first. And I believe from the sign-up sheet that would be Ed Ramey. If you will come forward and identify yourself and present your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed Ramey from the firm of Isaacs and Rosenbaum, and I am substituting today for Cara Veach, who was here at the initial hearing, and I apologize to the board for her absence. She's stuck in a deposition, and what I can tell is likely to be there tomorrow morning, the way things are. She asked me to come up and appear this afternoon. Ms. Veach submitted a written motion for rehearing, laid out in that motion the concerns that the objectors have. There's only really one of them that I wish to address this afternoon. I'll let the motion stand, the written motion stand on its own. I'm sure the board digest those issues. But there's one that I would like to, I'm sure, reemphasize, because I'm sure Ms. Veach addressed it at the hearing. What I would like to do is sort of reemphasize it a little bit, because I think it's a terribly important one, and that's actually the first issue, the single subject issue that she raises. What this particular measure does is propose to redefine or define, really redefine, a term in three separate sections of Article 2 of the State Constitution, Sections 3, 6, and 25. They're inalienable rights, equal justice, which is basically access to the court, and due process. And I guess I'd also like to first note that what I'm about to say may sound a little legalistic, and I apologize for that. And I don't mean it to be, but I think this is a very important issue, not only in the context of this initiative, but of initiatives in general. And secondly, I do want to emphasize a distinction right up front of what I'm trying to speak about here, and I want to refer to Justice Coates' dissent in number 55 from last year, a Supreme Court of opinions, I guess, that Mr. Domenico and I have discussed in the past at some length, trying to figure out what the Dickens all the various justices meant in the context of those opinions. One issue that Justice Coates, in his dissent in 55, focused in on is the distinction between a subject, which is what this board is dealing with in the context of determining whether a single subject or multiple subjects exist, and purposes or effects. And what I'm about to say, I can't emphasize enough, I'm trying to address the concept of subject. For the purpose of this argument, I really don't care what the proponent's purposes are. And I really don't, I'm not trying to invite the board to engage in an exercise with me of trying to predict what the effects might be. I've done that up here before in the context of other initiatives. I don't want to do that today. What I'm talking about specifically is subject in the strictest sense that Justice Coates meant that term to mean. What is going on here is that the proponents... Let me back off one other step. I apologize for stumbling a bit, but I found out I was coming up here about 20 minutes ago. I suspect there might not be a difficulty if the proponents wish to float an initiative which redefines the term person for all purposes of Colorado state law or the Constitution of the state of Colorado. I don't know. I haven't really thought about that too much, but I can see how the board may well determined that that could be a single subject having to do with the redefinition of the word person. I would also suggest that in the context of single subject, it would be totally appropriate for the proponents to go into any particular measure of the Colorado Constitution and redefine a term, person, or anything else within the context of that section, no matter how broad or narrow that section may be, whether it's Tabor, whether it's something as broad and all-consuming and amorphous as due process, whatever that may mean. That due process itself is a subject, and one can go in and redefine a term in there. I should hesitate, I guess, with regard to Tabor, because the court has told us there are at least three subjects in the context of Tabor, but at least in the context of any subject, a term can be redefined. What's going on with this initiative is that the amendment would go into three separate sectional pots, if you will, three separate and defined sections of Article 2 of the Colorado Constitution, and redefine a term within each of those sections. Each of those sections is itself a section, a separate subject. Inalienable rights is something very different from due process. And, I mean, as an example, as I'm sure the board members all know, inalienable rights cannot be taken away, period. That's the idea or the concept behind inalienable rights. Rights protected by the Due Process Clause can indeed and very readily be taken away, for the most part, as long as procedural due process is accorded in that context, notice and a right to a fair hearing. These are different things. Equality of justice under, I think it's Section 6, mainly deals with access to the courts, clearly not an inalienable right, but a right that is separately addressed in a separate section because it's a separate subject. What the proponents have done with the way they have approached this particular initiative, and why they've done it, I don't know, and I really don't care, but what they've done is they've picked three subjects. They've gone into those three subject pots and redefined a term. Now, they can do it in each one separately. I suppose they could do it generally for purposes of everything having to do with law in Colorado or the Constitution, but they've picked three specific and exclusive separate pots or separate subjects. And I would suggest to the board that that is a multi-subject amendment by virtue of the fact that they're doing it within the context of three separate pots. And by the way, there's some that they've left out. One example, just glancing through, is Section 16A. They don't have that in there. Section 16A has to do with the rights of crime victims. The word person is used in there. And if a person, as defined, and this would be a totally logical thing for someone to try to do, is a victim of a criminal act, they can, through their designee or legal guardian, seek to be heard in a court. Another subject, the fourth subject in the context of the Colorado Bill of Rights, Article 2, and it's been omitted for whatever purpose, and that's fine. But what the proponents have done is select three out of how many different subjects, and they are indeed three different subjects, and procedurally they've gone into them to redefine a term in the specific context of each of those subjects. And I would submit to the board that that is something that, by definition, doing it this way is a multi-subject initiative. If they want to have three initiatives and do it, they can do that. They can propose an initiative like that. I'm a little concerned, too, not only in the context of this initiative, but with the precedent that this board would set by permitting this sort of thing to happen. What this board would suggest is that proponents could pick other terms, revenue perhaps, and go into selected sections, different subjects of the Colorado Constitution or code, statutory code, and redefine terms, a given term, revenue, within the context of those sections, Tabor, tobacco tax, heaven knows what else, wherever revenue might appear. They can selectively go into different subjects and redefine a term. Employee would be an example. Infamous Amendment 41, which I guess is Article 29 of the Constitution, the word employee is used. I suppose one could go in and try to amend the word employee in that provision and in some other provision, but not generally, not across the board. Again, selectively picking different subjects within which to redefine terms. All of which is fine under our single subject approach as long as we do that with initiatives broken down by the subject. And the great term water that we always talk about because of the Waters 2 case, when I suppose could go in and pick different topics. And I'm sort of beating this to death here, but in redefine water for those purposes. So again, I would submit to the board that if the point is to redefine a term generally, I'm not convinced that the proponents cannot do that. If the point is to redefine a term within selective subjects, they certainly can do that through multiple initiatives. But if the sections within which they're amending the terms are themselves separate subjects or defined separate subjects, I don't think they can do that properly within a single initiative. And I think the precedent that would set is not a good one. So that would be, I guess, my primary concern. Now, the suggestion could be made, well, what's the difference? If they can just redefine the term generally, why can't they do it this way? This has to do with the definition of person, just as another initiative may have to do with the definition of employee or revenue or something such as that. But there we're talking about effects, and that's why I want to sort of haul the board back to focusing on the subject. The effect may or may not be the same. And I think in some sections, such as 16A, are left out, the effect most certainly would not be the same. But that's not the concern that really I don't think confronts the board today. I mean, the board, and I'm going to agree with Justice Coates on this, should be focused on subject. These are different subjects. The manner that the approach has been taken is to selectively pick subjects and redefine a common term. within those different subjects. We got three subjects here by definition when you take that approach. If the proponents want to do this another way, they certainly can, but that way would submit to the board would violate the single subject requirement. And with that, I will stop unless the board has any questions.
Questions for Mr. Ramey?
Well, you've hit on essentially what my concern was that I expressed and that I asked about at the initial hearing, which I asked why not just define, I asked proponents why not just redefine it generally, person for purposes of the Constitution or at least Article 2. And the response was this is where these three areas are the ones that where it makes sense essentially to do it, that it would lead to confusing or absurd results, and just in order to avoid that, they've only applied it in this way. Essentially, this is where the action would be anyway. And you know, I've looked at Article 2 and 16A and the rest, and there are other uses of person in there, but I think the conclusion we all came to last time was that it does make sense here, given that the subject here is defining person more broadly in ways to include fetuses where it would have an effect essentially on abortion, right? And so that seems to me to be a single subject, and I'm convinced you're hedging a little bit on it. I'm definitely convinced that if they simply said person for purposes of Article 2, we'd have no trouble. And so I don't quite see the concern with limiting it to the places, at least from a single subject point of view. Why do they have to include everything, even if it doesn't really have any effect, even if it wouldn't have an effect, or at least not the effect that they're trying to have? I mean, that it would simply lead to confusion and a mess in terms of rights of crime victims and that sort of thing.
Well, Mr. Domenico, I wasn't here for the first hearing, so I apologize if I missed that discussion, but it's a good point.
Yeah,
I think the danger with that approach, respectfully, is that you and I are launching down a road of discussing exactly what Justice Coates, and I think correctly, I could be chewed out by some of my law partners, but I think correctly is focusing on in terms of don't worry about effects. We are not concerned about effects. Effects may be absurd. They may be completely logical. What we're talking about here is the concept of a subject. Now, I would agree with you that there's some aspects of Article 2 where incorporating a fetus in the context of, or viewing a person as including a fetus could in theory result in an absurd result. I don't know if the right to bear arms is in there, but that would certainly, you know, if it is, that would certainly be, you know, an example of that sort of thing. I don't think that's unique in the Colorado Constitution. I mean, a six-month-old child is clearly a person, I think, as we currently, all of us currently understand it to be, and we're not concerned about a six-month-old baby's right to bear arms, if you will. The courts generally sort out where the application of the, you know, provision has a logical, realistic meaning or not. Article 16A, on the other hand, is an example where I think it would be perfectly logical if that was what the proponents wanted to do, to insert that, and they elected not to. But again, I don't want to get too much into, well, why did they leave this section out and include these sections? Because, I mean, I really don't care. The fact is, I say that respectfully too, but I mean, the fact is, these are different subjects. I will not quibble, Mr. Domenico, with your statement that a initiative could be proposed that redefines the term person for all purposes, at least of the Colorado Constitution, perhaps of Article 2. I don't want to quibble with you about that because you may be correct. But that's not what they've done. They've gone into separate subject pots in Article 2 and redefined it in there, and they have selectively decided that it shouldn't apply in other pots, whether or not it's logical. I apologize for interrupting you.
I was about to interrupt you. I agree with you, but if what we're getting at is what is there a subject here, a single subject, why does sort of exempting 16A or some other part make it multiple subjects all of a sudden?
Well, it's not
logically, I'm not. It seems sort of that you're saying that by doing that, they're turning it into a purpose or effect-based analysis, but it seems to me that it's actually your argument that turns it into an effect-based argument.
Well, it's not the exemption of 16A. I'm merely posing that as an example. It's the fact that they have chosen three other distinct subjects within which, in a single initiative, to redefine a term. That's what causes three subjects. Now, if they added 16A in, I would submit to the board respectfully that you have four subjects, because it's despite the predictions as to how a broader amendment would be applied, a broader redefinition of the term may be applied, which is purely predicting effect and the logical application of words that have to be applied logically by the courts and legislators adopting conforming legislation in any event. They have chosen three in this case, if you add 16A, four different subjects, which are manifestly, patently different subjects. In Article 2, they are about different things, and they've gone into those subjects to redefine a term. A common term, yes, but within three different subjects.
Well, I agree that those are three different subjects, but what I'm confused about is if they could issue a blanket change in the definition of person, that would affect, as you say, at least three, maybe four, maybe more different, what you're calling different subjects. How does reducing that number flip it all of a sudden from one subject to multiple subjects?
Because I think if you redefine a term, Mr. Domenico, for all purposes, that becomes the subject of your initiative. Defining person, defining water, defining employee, defining revenue, defining the, I don't know, whatever word you might want to define. But when, instead of doing that, this is where I was afraid I might sound a little legalistic, and I apologize for that, but I really do think it's terribly important. Instead of doing that, you go inside different subjects, manifestly different subjects, as you've just noted, Mr. Domenico, and redefine a term in this one, and then redefine a term, happens to be the same term, in another one, and then do it again in a third subject, perhaps a fourth subject, perhaps a 20th subject, perhaps only two subjects. Those are different subjects when you take that approach. And that, if the board sanctions that, what I fear is you've opened the door to that sort of multi-subject, section-by-section amendment just by using a similar term or a phrase that may appear in multiple sections with very different consequences and very different meanings. And that's very much the case here. Defining a fetus as a person for purposes of inalienable rights is something very different from defining a fetus as a person for purpose of essentially access to the courts or according procedural due process. So what bothers me the most, and the precedent that I'm most concerned about coming out of this board, is not the effect of redefining the word person any way that one may want to redefine it, but by doing it by going into a section and tinkering with a definition within the context of that section, doing it in another section which deals with a different subject, irrespective of whether one could apply that term definitionally different for all purposes under Colorado law or even under Article 2. I hope I'm being clear. I sound like I'm tying myself up in a knot a little bit in terms of the language, but it's the process here which is, I think, hugely important. The way they've chosen to do it requires three different initiatives. If they can accomplish the same effect a different way, that's okay. I'm not arguing about that. Then perhaps they should do that. But this way is a multi-subject initiative, and it's three. And if you add 16A, it's four. And if you add something else, it's five. And if you take one away, it's two. But it's still multiple subjects.
Mr. Cardin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ramey, I appreciate
kind of fleshing out this purposes versus subjects distinction and that analysis and Justice Coates' dissent in initiative number 55. And I have one question, and I hope it's not too loaded of a question. But you, under this, the relevant statute, under 140.106.5, I just want to lay out my reasoning for you, and please tell me where you think this reasoning is faulty. Under 140.106.5, subsection 1E, as you know, that is the provision of the statute on initiatives that sets forth more or less the General Assembly's intent with regard to the single subject requirement. And it says the practice is intended by the General Assembly to be inhibited by section 1, 5.5 of Article 5 and section 2, subsection 3 of Article 19 are as follows. And the first is to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection for the purpose of enlisting in support of the measure the advocates of each measure and thus securing the enactment of the measures that could not be carried upon their merits. And then the second statement of intent is to prevent surreptitious measures. But to focus on the incongruous subjects portion of that statute, and to follow up with the Supreme Court's recent decision in the matter of the title board on 2005-2006 number 55. The court in their discussion first, as part of that discussion, talked about first consistent with the goal of preventing the inadvertent passage of a surreptitious provision, initiative may not hide purposes unrelated to the initiative's central theme. Went on to say, second, consistent with the goal of prohibiting a single legislative act from addressing disconnected or incongruous measures, an initiative grouping distinct purposes under a broad theme will not satisfy the single subject requirement. That is, although an initiative may contain several purposes, they must be interrelated. Where I'm at on this is that it seems to me that I'm in agreement with Mr. Domenico, and I think to some extent with you, that there may be more than one subject in this measure. But isn't it possible, it seems to me, that the change to the definition of person as it relates to these three sections provides the congruity for purposes of the single subject requirement?
I don't think it does. I'm not surprised to hear me say that, Mr. Cardin. And let me see if I can be. I think it comes down. I want to take some of your language, too, as I think I heard it. As you've just noted, I think Mr. Domenico noted the same thing. We are dealing with different subjects. But you can focus on subject as being the definition of person, or in my other examples, employee, revenue, whatever the case might be. If that's the subject, you have a single subject, and one I would acknowledge I think can propose an amendment that deals with that subject. But waters too, I mean, caution that isn't the panacea just because it has to do with water. Is not a panacea. We can't just, because we find a connective word, a connective concept, doesn't render everything within the measure the same subject. The difficulty here, again, is one more of approach, but it's hugely important, and that's why I emphasized in the beginning, the focus has to be on subject and not on effect. We may come out at the end in terms of predicting effects at the same place, whether the proponents do it this way or do it some other way or whatever. But that's not, I think, the entire body of the state Supreme Court would concur with that. What's being done here is we are beginning with three separate subjects, inalienable rights, equality of justice, and due process are different subjects, and in themselves quite broad. And that itself has given rise to concerns in the past of whether there are multiple subjects within those concepts. But again, taking Justice Coates' comment that due process will take that as a single subject. I have no problem with that. But these three pots themselves are different subjects. And what's being done here is not an amendment of a term being applied to different things, but the proponents are going into those three different pots. I'm being a little repetitive, but the distinction I think is important, and redefining a term within those pots. If you're going to redefine a term within the provision that guarantees due process, that is a subject with all kinds of potential ramifications, some of which, in response to Mr. Domenico's concern, might be ludicrous. There might be certain manners in which due process, if you try to accord it to a fetus, would make no rational sense. And we presume courts would not recognize that and not apply it in that fashion. But that word, person, can certainly be redefined within the subject pot of due process. But at the same time, within the same measure, they're doing it in two other sections, inalienable rights as well. And again, there's certain inalienable rights that may not make any sense. I haven't looked at the enumeration of them, but they may not make any sense with regard to a fetus. Courts can certainly sort that out. But they're within the walls of a distinct subject when they're dealing with inalienable rights. They're redefining a term within that specific subject. So I think the distinction between redefining a term generally. And I won't quibble with Mr. Domenico's comment that perhaps you could do it with regard to everything within Article 2. I don't know. But redefining a term generally is one thing, subject to the caution of Waters 2, which I think is still good law, notwithstanding it's getting a little long in the tooth. But doing it by going into separate, manifestly different subjects that are, I don't think anyone on the board is arguing that inalienable rights, due process, and equality of justice are not different subjects. Going within those three separate subjects and redefining a term within those selected provisions. You've got three subjects. I mean, we're sort of maybe talking past each other a little bit, Mr. Cardin, and I apologize for that, but I think the manner of doing it, the process, is the key problem here. It's a horrible process, procedurally. If the board sets that, and concerning ourselves with, well, would we come out the same place if we did it a different way? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. And that may be for another day. I don't know. But that's not the board's concern. The predicting the effects, or is there another way to get there? Is there a way to amend various aspects of Tabor without violating the same? I don't know. That would be the same as redefining a term at various spots within that. I don't know. But that's not what's happening with the way this initiative is crafted.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramey, this may be a little repetitious, but I'm really where Mr. Domenico and Mr. Carton are, but I kind of want to go over that because I think it leads to a question that I want to ask you. I mean, it really does seem to me that essentially what the measure does is that it extends the Bill of Rights to people from the point of fertilization. And it could have just done that. And it would have been essentially the same measure that we have before us. But I think, in my opinion, you seem to make too much of the manner in which they've gone about achieving that result. And what they did, specifically, rather than just simply doing that, they identified in the way they drafted the measure the three sections that it actually appears to have some effect. Now, as an aside, I think you raise a good question about 16A, and I think, you know, they could have said person for purposes of Article 2 means this, with the exception of 16A, if that was a conscious choice. And I think proponents are entitled to make exceptions in general. But here, the way they drafted it was to identify what they perceived, and this is based on what the proponent said last time, I think. They perceived these are the three sections where there really is an effect. And it seems like by drafting it that way, they've, from your point of view, they've ensnared themselves into a catch-22, a kind of a rule that you can't, in effect, amend three different sections of the Constitution, because necessarily, you know, almost by definition, there three different sections would be three different subjects. And so there you could, you know, if we extend that, the precedent there would be you could never amend more than one section of the Constitution, it seems to me. And in fact, maybe you could never amend more than one paragraph of the Constitution or the statutes, because, you know, we're taught in school that every separate subject, topic, or whatever should be in a separate paragraph. So, you know, when you parse it that way, it, you know, necessarily there's going to be separate subjects in a sense. But I hear you saying that you could never amend more, at least at the level of an article of the Constitution, you could not amend more than one section. Is that correct?
No. Not quite. And again, this is where I want to apologize for the seemingly legalistic sound of this. And it may be something we just simply have to sort out one way or the other in the longer term. I'm not trying to say that. I think that a proponent, the idea of ensnaring themselves is I'm not sure what the proponent's purposes are, what their intentions are. And for purposes of today's discussion, I really don't care what they are. But the manner of structuring the initiative, I think Mr. Hobbs is terribly important. I think they can do, in all likelihood, I've never been confronted with case, but I can't think of a reason why they can't do what you describe, and that is redefine a term for broad purposes. Again, subject to the constraints of Waters too. If there's a point where you go over the line, but assuming we don't go over that line for purposes of Article 2, perhaps redefining a term. And I'm not concerned that certain sections are left out necessarily, and I'm not concerned that some applications of the redefined term might be absurd, and which what the courts do in cases like that is they don't apply it in the absurd fashion. We are living, you know, with that today. What I think the problem is selectively picking different subjects. And if I've heard correctly, all three members of the board have acknowledged, and I don't mean to approach this like a debate, sir, even Mr. Domenico to some extent, I think have acknowledged that the different sections of Article 2 of the Constitution themselves constitute different subjects. And when the approach...
I better interrupt you.
Mr. Domenico.
I'll accept that they can be, and at least for purposes of argument, it's worthwhile to consider them separate subjects. But I don't necessarily concede that they have to be considered separate subjects. In fact, I think they could fundamentally just be considered under the subject of... fundamental civil rights, or even if you want, civil rights that make sense to apply to a fetus, if one considers a fetus a person, as proponents do. And so I accepted that for purposes of arguing that, but I don't think it's necessarily the case that those always, that they can't be considered part of the same subject. So sorry to interrupt again.
Well, no, that's actually very helpful, because it helps me kind of refine the distinction that I want to reemphasize, and then I really will be quiet. The discussion that Mr. Domenico and I just had may someday be one before this board in which we could engage, and that is, could the term person be redefined for purposes of essentially everything that's in Article 2? And that would be an interesting discussion, and I may be here, and we may quibble and dance around about that, whether you can do that or not. That's not what is happening here. That is absolutely, manifestly not what is before this board today. They're not doing what Mr. Domenico suggests, and perhaps quite rightly, that they may and should be able to do. What they're doing is picking three sub-topics of Article 2, which themselves, I would submit, are different subjects, and redefining the term within those. Now, we can argue, is the effect the same? And, you know, I've heard that. I don't know. Perhaps. And again, I don't think we should care. It's not a question of predicting the effects. It's not a question of trying to figure out what is motivating the proponents. The fact is you have three subjects going here. If you redefine a term within selected subjects, I could add Tabor to it. I don't know if the word person appears in Tabor, and I don't want to read through it and find out, but let's assume that it does somewhere. Granted, it's outside of Article 2. It's in Article 10, but I could throw that in. That's another subject. Now we've got four. It's permitting proponents to come forward and redefine terms within the context of separate subjects, even though they might be able to redefine a term for broader, more sweeping purposes, is a precedent that I don't think this board should set. I think that guts the single subject requirement. All I need is a word. All I need is a concept, and I can go willy-nilly through all sorts of multiple subjects. And it is incongruous. I would reemphasize this again, in response to where Mr. Cardin and I left off. When you're talking about inalienable rights, it's different from due process. It is conceptually, manifestly different from due process. It's a different animal. Inalienable rights cannot be taken away. Rights protected by the due process clause can be. That is a major distinction. Those are different subjects. And to go into each separately and redefine a term in the context of a single initiative, again, not being repetitive subjects. In a way, I'm somewhat grateful for this initiative. I think that's going to enable us to sort this out. But this sort of approach, though again it sounds legalistic and sort of thing lawyers swim around in, I think is hugely important to how you permit different subjects to be addressed in the context of a single initiative, which you shouldn't be doing.
And I just want to say, you know, I think I said that the measure, that those three sections are, you know, three subjects. I don't mean to be saying that it's three subjects for purposes of single subject analysis. I'm just saying they're different topics necessarily. Assuming that there was a reason for breaking them up into paragraphs or whatever. I don't think they're three different subjects for purposes of single subject analysis. I don't think you can have a mechanical test like that. I agree with Mr. Domenico. I think a measure that amends more than one section of an article could violate the single subject requirement. In fact, I think a measure that amends only one section of the Constitution could violate, and we have examples, violates the single subject requirement. But I think a measure could amend multiple sections and not violate the single subject requirement. I just don't think you can have a mechanical test. I mean, we had, and it may not be particularly relevant, but we had a various versions of a proposal last cycle, and I think the cycle before, which did try to enact a mechanical test like that. It said that any proposal that amends only one article of the Constitution must conclusively be presumed to be a single subject. And that approach was to look at it at the article level. Every separate article must be a separate subject. Therefore, you can't amend more than one, but you, as long as you stick to one article. But obviously, you could have completely distinct subjects, and you just amend them into a single article, which I think kind of undermines the idea why a mechanical test based on whether you're amending more than one article or more than one section or more than one subsection or more than one paragraph. I just don't think that determines whether there's a violation of single subject. I think you have to look at it a little more meaningfully than that. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would respectfully disagree, I guess, with your definition of what a subject is and the suggestion that we're not looking at it meaningfully. I'm not quite sure how to respond to what you're saying. I would submit that when the approach that you take to go into, and I don't really care whether it's, you know, part of a different sections, part of the same article, or different articles, or different concepts within a section, whatever the case might be. But when what the pot that you're going into, pot A, is a different subject from pot B, and that happens to be the case, I would respectfully submit to the board with regard to inalienable rights and process as an example. I mean, they're in separate sections of Article 2 for a reason. They're there. They're different subjects. What's happening is that we're going into different pots and redefining a term within those pots. And however you define subject, I think when you do that, and these aren't necessarily logically connected, non-incongruous pots. They're different things. They address different types of rights, different types of civil rights. I mean, I suppose we could define person for civil rights in general. I think you're probably going too broad in that case. But that would be better than doing it this way, selectively picking different subject rights established that just happen to be within the same article, I don't really care, but are in different sections that are themselves, they address different things or different subjects, and redefining a term within the context of that pot, irrespective of whether you could get to the same place by doing it in a broader fashion. Perhaps you could, but we're predicting effects, and I really don't think the board should be concerned with that. The manner that's been chosen, and then I will stop, because I'm detecting the unified wall coming at me here, but you know, I think it is a terribly important issue that needs to get sorted out. Doing it this way is addressing multiple subjects, and those subjects are not the definition of person. Those subjects are inalienable rights, due process, and equality of justice, because those are the pots that you are amending. Those are the different subjects that you are redefining the terms within.
Mr. Domenico.
I want to ask you a hypothetical, and then I will leave you alone. But
I can stay here all day, but I don't think it works.
No, I know. I find it interesting, but we've got other things to do. But what if they, instead of saying as used in Sections 3, 6, and 25 of Article 2, what if they simply said, for those civil rights that it makes sense to apply to unborn fetuses, the terms person, blah, in Article 2 or in the state constitution, the terms person and so on, the same thing. I mean, that seems to me to address your problem. The difference there is, then the proponents essentially have to allow the courts to pick and choose which sections it applies to, whereas they want themselves to direct the courts which sections it applies to. I mean, so I mean, would you disagree that if they said where it makes sense for civil rights, or even just where it makes sense in Article 2 or in the state constitution in order to protect unborn children from abortion, say they were that explicit, to avoid the other problem you guys bring up in your petition. If it said that, I don't see how your argument would, it seem to me, not have any force, because there's no more reference to these different pots. But the difference there is who gets to choose where it applies, and why should they have to defer that question to the courts?
Well, let me respond to that, Mr. Domenico, in a couple ways. For the sake of today's discussion, I think they can do, in the context of a single subject, what you're suggesting, and that is either float an initiative to protect a fetus from abortion, or have an initiative that redefines person to include a fetus for broad sweeping purposes, and that in all likelihood becomes their subject. If they want to pick and choose, I think, and do the job that the courts generally do, and which they're having to do today, because obviously aspects of Article 2 can't apply to the various ages of persons as already defined. If they want to do that, I think they can do that too, Mr. Domenico. But if they're going to do that job for the courts, they have to do it on a subject-by-subject basis. This should be three initiatives if they want to do that. If they want to pick and choose the subjects within which their redefined term can apply, they are welcome to do it, but they have to do it subject-by-subject-by-subject. If they want to do something broader and sweeping that is not selective in that fashion, then I think within a single subject they may be able to do that. But they can't have it both ways. They can't say, well, we don't want the broad sweeping redefinition. We want to pick the subjects, and we want to do it in one initiative. That is what violates a single subject. And I appreciate, by the way, the discussion with the board today, because I think we're fleshing out, putting aside the substance of this particular initiative, I think we're fleshing out something that may need to get fleshed out just as a procedural process in how we address what the single subject requirement means. And Mr. Domenico, you just defined it with your question to me, I think, perfectly.
All right.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey? If not, thank you. Okay. Mr. Moiser, on behalf of the proponents.
Thank you. I want to start off with...
I'm sorry. You identify yourself and who you represent. So.
Mark Moiser for the proponents.
Thank you.
I want to start out with an analogy. And I know, you know, analogies can be a little bit flawed, but imagine we wanted to pass a law that required school kids to wear uniforms, whether they're in class, whether they're at lunch break, or whether they're on extracurricular activities. The law or the purpose of that statute is the uniform. But by being specific in the law, by citing three separate things, shows everyone that it is to apply in all the areas, not just one area, like whether they're in classroom. I know that it's, you know, you can sit there and pick flaws, but I just wanted to give a quick analogy of what this is. The single subject of this amendment is personhood and whether person begins at fertilization. If, as proponents, we can convince the voters that, you know, personhood begins at fertilization and they do pass this, then that decision would need to be applied in the three different areas. I want to address this concept that's been coming up of, you know, can we define person for all of Article 2 versus just these three different things? And I want to use another analogy. We have several sections in Article 2. And I'm going to analogize it to a bag of marbles. What we are doing is we're going in and we're picking out the yellow marbles and saying, as for the yellow marbles, those yellow marbles we can keep that single subject because we have gone in and said this is where it applies, and as you guys have so eloquently stated, it doesn't always make sense for all the other areas. In reviewing several cases regarding single subject, I want to draw the board's attention to a couple quotes by the Supreme Court on the single subject. The first one comes from ballot title 1999, number 255, and the court said, the fact that provisions of measures may affect more than one statutory provision does not itself mean that the measure contains multiple subjects. We are talking sections of the Constitution, but the Supreme Court has already said just because something goes into multiple statutes doesn't automatically mean that it's multiple subjects. Another one comes from same year, 1999, and it's number 256. Just because a proposal may have different effects that are not invariably interconnected does not mean that it necessarily violates the single subject requirement. It is enough that the provisions of a proposal are connected. And I think here, what is the connecting? It is the personhood. And that is the glue that binds this amendment together. It's not, yes, it's inalienable rights. Yes, it's equality of justice. Yes, it's due process of law. But the glue that binds these three amendments together is their similarities, and that we are working with the definition of person to establish those basic fundamental rights from the moment of fertilization. I also want to respond very early in his arguments. He stated that we're changing the Constitution, and I tend to, in the preamble of our state constitution, it talks about these rights are to be given to our progeny, to our descendants. And what we are doing here is, in our view, going back to the basic fundamental principles of the founders of this Colorado Constitution and saying, this was supposed to be for our children, born and unborn. Just because they're not born, there are certain rights that they're supposed to have. And so we've gone through, found the three areas where we feel the courts are not interpreting it according to the basic Constitution, and making sure the court understands that personhood, basic fundamental rights, are to be granted to all, you know, from the moment life begins. I know he did not address the second half of the memorandum, the other complaint regarding the abortion, and I will just really quickly address that. This amendment does not have any enacting clause. It does not give the prosecutors any criminal powers. It doesn't give the courts any civil, it doesn't give anybody any civil rights to go out and enact it. This is a basic constitutional amendment. In and of itself, it is the foundation that can later be used to overturn abortion. It is the foundation that could be used to bring a challenge to Roe v. Wade, but in and of itself, it cannot end abortion. And so any discussion about that, I mean, abortion is not used in the amendment. The whole amendment is whether personhood should be granted to the unborn, and what rights would that entitle? And I'm open for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Moiser? I would like to ask if you have any comment about 16A. The measure did not extend the rights to Section 16A of Article 2. Was there a reason for that?
I would have to look at 16A. I would, you know.
It's the rights of crime victims. It provides that victims
I would have
and their
to
families.
See 16B. There might have been something in 16B that caused. I'm not seeing it right off the top of head. I think there might have been something in 16B or C that decision was made.
And I was going to suggest what it might be, but partly, but you may have, maybe by implication answering my question, that maybe you haven't looked at it, but. It provides that victims and their families have the right to be heard at critical stages of the criminal justice process. And I wondered if right to be heard was interpreted literally. I assume somebody, you know, a fetus could be heard through counsel, for example. But it occurred to me that maybe right to be heard was the reason for excluding, for not including 16A.
I'm going to just have to, you know, because there's multiple people involved in why 16A was not used. I'd have to talk to multiple people.
Okay. Questions? Mr. Domenico?
You said that what binds the proposed amendment together is personhood, or redefining personhood. And I think if that's all that binds it together, I might have to agree with Mr. Ramey that's too broad. The question for me is, what binds these three sections of the Constitution together? Not so much what binds the amendment itself together. I mean, what would you say binds those three sections together?
What? I'm going to go ahead and rephrase it here.
Please do.
You're asking what binds inalienable rights, equality of justice, and due process of law? I think in this particular case, for this particular amendment, what binds them together is that they are fundamental basic rights that can be and logically could be granted to the preborn.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Yeah, they're easy on me.
Okay. We got you last time.
I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing? If you'll come forward, identify yourself for the record, and then I'll need to ask you to sign on the sign-in sheet, too. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Hazuri. I am the executive director of the ACLU of Colorado, and the ACLU of Colorado is part of a coalition, Protect Families, Protect Choice, and I am here today speaking on their behalf. First of all, before I get into what is more the meat of my remarks, you gentlemen have been referring to this as a fetus. Let's be perfectly clear. We are not talking about a fetus. We are talking about a fertilized egg. That's not a fetus. Now, if you gentlemen and Mr. Ramey don't understand that difference, how do you expect the average Colorado voter to understand that difference? This goes to the crux of our argument that this is misleading and dishonest, that you are setting up the Colorado voter for a huge surprise. This initiative is about banning all abortions and many forms of contraception or birth control in Colorado. The proponents of this measure in other hearings and in the media have made that perfectly clear, but they have not put that plainly before the voter. They have not used the language that would explain to the voter that this will outlaw all abortions, an inalienable right, equality of justice, due process. That would require, by its very terms, the banning of abortion and many forms of contraception. I've been an attorney in the state of Colorado for approximately a little bit more than 20 years, and I have seen issues come before voters, be voted, and then suddenly they're surprised by what they actually voted for. And that's what this initiative does. It is going to be a huge surprise. If a fertilized egg, this is not an implanted egg, this is just a fertilized egg, is a person, it will need a court-appointed lawyer to assist it in inheritance matters. What if it's not implanted for some reason? Because it's a person before it's implanted. You have to understand a little bit of the medicine to understand what this means. People of Colorado are not all medical doctors. But if it's not implanted, how will it be determined whether it was murder or it was an act of nature that it did not become a fetus? Are you going to have people report every time they've had sex? And then if you have them reporting every time they have sex, how are you going to determine whether or not an egg was fertilized during that sexual intercourse? Are you going to probe women? Everybody, all the women are going to line up in the morning after they've had sex and have some sort of way of determining whether or not that egg has been fertilized. If that fertilized egg is a person, its rights begin the moment of fertilization. You can't protect it if you don't know it's there. With all the court-appointed lawyers you're going to need a lot more judges. You're going to need not a lot more lawyers. I know that there are many people who think we have too many already. But we're going to be doing that. And I think the Colorado voter is going to be, again, very surprised when they find out that we're going to need thousands more lawyers. I think that this is very misleading. It is almost surreptitious, if you will, to use the term from the statute. It's actually surreptitious. I think also you're going to find that Colorado voters will not understand that this will outlaw forms of birth control, because there are forms of birth control that prevent implantation, which is what leads to being a fetus. because the egg itself has the right under this initiative. I suppose that there will be no sex allowed eventually except for procreation, and we'll all be going back to the rhythm method. Surprise. This is a very extreme measure with untold consequences. The proponents know that these are untold consequences, and they are likely consequences. And that's why they are purposefully being deceptive in their choice of language in this initiative. They, Colorado voters, deserve to know exactly what this initiative will do. And they cannot know that from this language. So I'm going to urge you to grant the motion for rehearing and then find this initiative's language is flawed beyond repair. Thank you.
Are there questions for Ms. Azzurri? I think the way I understand your argument basically is that what the measure purports to do can't be done because of practical problems with determining the moment of fertilization and so forth. What the measure could do, well, I say it can't be done, and it's misleading what it's attempting to do.
I don't know if it can be done.
But,
I'm sorry.
Well, it just sounded like you were saying that since you would not know whether an egg has been fertilized or not, you could not afford the rights that the measure purports to grant. And so in any event, I think you're suggesting it could be done. The measure could prohibit abortion if it were more directly doing so. Is that correct?
Surely. If the word banning abortion is in the measure, then certainly it can ban abortion.
But it can't extend particular civil rights under Article 2 in the way that it does.
Because it is misleading, and it will result in surprise. I'm also not a medical personnel. I don't know whether or not you can tell whether or not an egg has been fertilized. I don't know the answer as to whether or not you can find that out. If you can, then you've got a person under this measure at that instant.
Further questions?
Well, but there hasn't been, since I've been here, a measure before us that we could predict very well all of its effects. And we don't have the authority to reject a measure simply because it may have effects that we can't predict or that voters can't predict. And despite our imprecision, perhaps, in using the term fetus, the measure is more precise than we were. The measure uses the word you would prefer it to use, which is fertilization. So I apologize for our imprecision, but I don't think that should be held against the measure when it accurately says what you wanted it to say in that sense. But I just wonder, I mean, what authority do you think we have to reject this simply because there may be effects that are unpredictable and beyond what some voters, others may be perfectly happy with those, that some voters may not predict? Isn't that true of every measure, and wouldn't that mean we can't approve anything?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Domenico, I disagree with you, first of all. It's not imprecision that has you calling this a fetus. It's what you think of it as being. It's not a fetus. And if you all don't, I mean, it's a vast difference between the term fetus and the term fertilized egg. And if you all don't understand that, there are thousands of Colorado voters who aren't going to understand that either. It's misleading.
I agree with you, but I mean the term it uses, if they were somehow using fetus and trying to, and then somewhere later on it said fertilized egg and that was really the effect, then that would be one thing. But it says from the moment of fertilization, and so if voters don't know what that means, I'm not sure how we can reject it based on our assumption that voters will assume fetus when they see fertilization.
We have three very, very well-educated voters right in this room who have called it a fetus. I don't think it's I don't think it's difficult to extrapolate that from these three gentlemen who are very well-educated to the general public. And so I don't think it's unpredictable that the voter will be misled and surprised.
Well, I guess I don't necessarily agree with you that we were using it as if we were confused. This certainly would cover fetuses, wouldn't it? I mean, fetuses aren't excluded from this. It just includes more than a fetus, right?
Well, actually what it does is it advances personhood to a very early stage.
Right, but that stage it also includes fetuses within that.
If this fertilized egg becomes a fetus, yes.
Right, okay. I don't want to get bogged down in that. I don't think it's all of that.
I do believe that it is not something. My understanding of this board's responsibility is to ensure that Colorado voters know what it is they're voting for or against. This measure does not do that. As it's written now, it is deceptive, it is dishonest, it is misleading, and it leads itself open not to conjecture, but to actuality, to reality, that this measure will mislead a number of people to voting either for it or against it. I don't know, but they will be voting for something they do not understand, because of what the proponents have chosen as their language.
Well, but how could they accomplish their purpose, which is the purpose, it seems to me, to extend person as far back as you say, beyond what is considered a fetus? How could they do that without using this language or something essentially the same language about fertilization? I mean, are you saying that it's simply impossible because voters get mixed up between what's a fetus and what's a fertilized egg, that it's simply impossible to define, to implement any measure that tries to go back to a fertilized egg is invalid because people can get confused about fetus versus fertilized egg?
Mr. Domenico, I don't believe I said that was the only deceptive part or the only misleading portion of this particular initiative language. If the purpose is to ban contraception and to ban abortion, they can do that. All they have to say is contraception will not be permitted in the state of Colorado. No abortion measure or any medical or surgical prevention of implantation. There are a number of ways that they could do that. You don't have to give it personhood to accomplish what they have stated are their goals.
Wouldn't they still say, I mean, if they wanted to just say abortion is banned, can they say that it's banned from the moment of fertilization of the egg? Or does that get them in the same problem you're still
gets them in the same problem.
Which means they can't do it.
I think that the purpose, it creates many of the same misleading measures or problems and untold or unspecified consequences. I think that there are unspecified consequences that they could spell out if they wish, so that the fertilized egg has all the protection that they want it to have.
Further questions? Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing? Mr. Moiser, did you want to respond to Ms. Hazuri?
Thank you. Mark Moiser on the record. All I'm saying is this is a constitutional amendment, which is defining when a person is, there are no
abortion regulations, there's no contraceptive regulations, there's nothing that gives a prosecutor or gives an individual the right to bring any action in this. And as such, I think a lot of their, what they're saying is hysteria and hypotheticals that are beyond what the major actually does. If you have any questions, I'm going to respond, but that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Then I'll turn to board discussion of the motion for rehearing. Was there anybody else who wished to testify? Okay, thank you. Board discussion.
I guess I'll start with discussing the last argument that it was that the measure is too deceptive or confusing to even get to the other questions. And in some ways, I sort of wish we had the authority here to vote against measures that we thought would the voters might not consider all the implications before voting for it, or that a large number of voters would be confused about it and may not think it through all the way or understand even some of the implications. That could have saved us a lot of trouble recently. But I don't think we have that power. I think reading the language of this measure, while it's certainly true, many of us, myself included, may not understand the intricacies of fertilization of an egg and what's properly termed a fetus, the measure itself is clearer than I've been and we've been, I think. And frankly, I don't think it could be much clearer and still accomplish the purpose, which is to go beyond, apparently, what is properly considered a fetus to fertilized eggs. Given that, I think the implications, we don't have the authority to consider all the parade of horribles, which a huge increase in the number of lawyers is probably very much one of the parade of horribles, if for no other reason than it's more competition for some of us. But the measure is straightforward. It certainly could have broad implications if it's put into place, but I don't think we have authority to vote against it. I don't think it's surreptitious, really, in any way. It could say, it could, I assume, say something like Colorado hereby bans abortion, but that wouldn't necessarily accomplish all the purposes that the proponents are seeking to accomplish. Because, as we heard, it probably will have broader implications than that. So I don't find it to be too surreptitious or confusing, even though it will have that effect, and the word abortion is not used in it anywhere. An indirect effect, we don't necessarily have to spell out either in the measure itself or, I don't think, in the title. Regarding single subject, I think we've discussed that plenty. I think if I did agree with Mr. Ramey that those three sections of the Constitution that are being addressed really were always and for every purpose separate subjects, then we might have a problem. Even then, I have trouble getting to the point of using the single subject requirement to invalidate it. But I don't agree that those are necessarily different. They can be tied together for congruous purposes, I guess, as the language says. And that is essentially, these are those civil rights that for proponents' purposes are should be and have, in their view, I guess, improperly been denied unborn fertilized eggs, fetuses, children. And so the fact that an inalienable right is somewhat different for legal purposes in some cases than a due process right, I don't think means that they're always can't ever be tied under the same subject. And so I think that covers all the reasons I see in the motion for rehearing, and I'm not persuaded by the motion, and so I'll vote against it.
Mr. Carton, any comments?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mr. Domenico. I won't rehash everything that I've said or that has been said here today. I appreciate the testimony from the proponents and the objectors to the measure. Again, going back to the single subject, I'm not persuaded that under the relevant provisions of the Constitution and the statute and the case law and as recently as measure number 55 that the measure contains incongruous or disconnected subjects. And I again restate the statutory direction that the single subject provision is to forbid treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure. Going back to public rights in Water 2, which Mr. Ramey cited, the principle in that case, the single subject requirement is intended to ensure that each proposal depends on its own merits for passage and to forbid the joining of incongruous subjects in the same measure. To the most, one of our most recent directions from the Supreme Court in on measure number 55 that says that that the single subject is consistent with the goal of prohibiting a single legislative act from addressing disconnected or incongruous measures. An initiative grouping distinct purposes under a broad theme will not satisfy the single subject requirement. I'm convinced and persuaded, based on the testimony here in our previous discussion, that the amendment before the title board to the Constitution on these three sections of the Constitution having to do with these three pots, these three groups of rights, there is connectivity, there is congruity, that the amendment, the definition of person, brings that these particular rights, the amendment to the Constitution in this measure has direct relevance to those for purposes of single subject, and that there is a that there are not, again, disconnected or incongruous subjects present here. As far as the alleged surreptitiousness of the measure, and again, going to measure number 55, the court said an initiative may not hide purposes unrelated to this initiative's central theme. And again, I went back to the, I thought Mr. Domenico's explanation and discussion here in closing was, I'm in agreement with him. I thought that was persuasive. Again, from the text of the measure, and the statement of the single subject, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution defining the term person to include any human being from the moment of fertilization as person is used in those provisions of the Colorado Constitution relating to inalienable rights, equality of justice, and due process of law. I think that's an accurate statement of the single subject. I agree with Mr. Domenico in a number of cases that have come before us that you can't, that it's not the title board's job in every situation to set forth every possible effect of a measure. And I don't think that the measure is misleading. I don't think that it hides purposes under the test recently set forth in the Initiative 55 case. And so, based on that, I'm of a mind to deny the motion, both on the allegation that it has more than multiple subjects, and also that it runs afoul of the surreptitiousness provisions.
And I agree with the statements that Mr. Domenico and Mr. Carton have made. I do think the measure is a single subject. I think essentially the subject of the measure is extending the basic rights of Article II to the moment of fertilization. And the fact that the drafters chose to identify the three sections in Article II where the measure has practical effect, I don't think should be dispositive or should change that result. I did use terminology very sloppily. I have a basic understanding of the difference between a fertilized egg and a fetus, and I should have been clearer. I think the measure, as Mr. Domenico pointed out, really is very clear. And I don't think the voters, I think it's inescapable that the measure has an effect on abortion, but I think the measure is the purpose and effect of the measure is broader than abortion. It does extend basic rights to the moment of fertilization, and so for all of the reasons that we've heard discussed today, it seems to me that regardless of the merits of the proposal, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, it seems to me that the measure is a single subject. If there's no other discussion, I'll entertain a motion with respect to the motion for rehearing. I would like to observe that the motion for rehearing also challenged the titles as well, and I inferred from Mr. Ramey's discussion that he stood on the brief as well. We haven't really specifically discussed that, but I think we're at the point of taking a motion on with respect to the motion for rehearing.
Mr. Chairman, I move to deny the motion for a hearing on NRA proposed initiative for 2007-2008, number 36.
I'll second that motion.
That's been moved by Mr. Carton, seconded by Mr. Domenico. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 36. The time is 2:56 p.m. We'll take about a 5-minute break.